Hi there, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. Today, a very, very, very important program, one that I've been particularly interested in from a number of different levels. Today, we're going to talk about when you take care of somebody. It's called caregiving. This comes from the work of a Dr. Diana Denholm in Florida, who wrote a book called The Caregiving Wife's Handbook, as if it was written for the wife of men who were sick and got some kind of a problem. They had to take care of them. But her book and the response to it and what I've read about it has kind of led me to a whole number of questions about this whole caregiving idea. Look, you grow up, they take care of you. And then you become an adult, and you take care of the babies. You're a caregiver, right? You're a parent. And then your parents get sick, and you take care of your parents. And then your mate gets sick, and you take care of your mate. Now, sometimes the extremes are there. What if you have a parent who lives beyond 75 years old and they're in their 80s and they're losing it? How do you take care of them, especially when they go numb and they turn against you? What do you do with a husband who fears losing his dignity, right? And so therefore has certain requirements about his caretaking? How do you keep your sanity when you are trying your best to give as much as you could give? How about the case where I knew of somebody who was taking care of someone who had to maintain themselves on narcotics because the pain was so bad? And the result of it was she was always furiously angry, always raging, as a dying animal would rage. And he had to take care of her, and she was raging at him all the time, screaming at his face. And he understood. So therefore, he didn't take it personally. What happens inside? So let me introduce you to Diana Denholm, also in the studio with me. Two other people who have had familiar experience with both of this, Linda Vanella and Gianna Valerio. And we all of you, must have experience with this unless you're an isolate, unless you live in a cave, unless some part of taking care of people is something you want to avoid your whole life. One last comment comes from the wisdom of a man I spoke to the other day. I said to him, so obviously you're a caretaker. He said, I'm tired of being a caretaker. He says, I want the opposite. I said, what's that? He said, I want someone to take care of me. And I said to him, that's not the opposite of taking care of someone. He said, what do you mean? I said, the opposite of taking care of someone is not taking care of someone, not them taking care of you. And when you don't take care of someone, sometimes they build the kind of muscle they need so that you don't have to take care of them. Very interesting concept. Diana, welcome to the program. WBAI is honored to have you here. Hi there, can you hear us?
Thank you for inviting me, because caregiving is such an important and critical issue, and as you have pointed out, everybody faces caregiving at some level, whether it's going on in their own home or the home of a friend or a family member or a neighbor. No family is untouched by caregiving.
Unless you're alone.
Even if you are alone, you still, you know, if you were totally isolated, yes.
Right.
But you would still have a friend or a relative or somebody that you know who is involved in caregiving, and you may interact with that person, so you are still touched by it.
So not many people I know are cave dwellers.
Everybody
gets touched by it. My big question to you is not the normal one. Well, there are two big questions. One is, how do you handle your anger at somebody who you're trying to take care of, and they are, and they treat you badly? That's one. How do you handle your anger at somebody who, and then the second question is my second big question, and this is all I care about today, but we could do many programs on this. as the caregivee, as the person receiving the caregiving, there's been no programs about that. What is your responsibility? What can you do to make this a better journey for your partner? What do you have to do for your partner? How do you make it work? There you have somebody working for you. If you had an employee, you would give them bonuses, right? If they were a good employee. Here you have a mate. How do you keep your mate not only just taking care of you, but how do you keep them happy with the love and respect you must feel for them? So those are my two questions. Which one do you want to approach first?
Well, I'd like to give a little background before I answer either of them.
Sure.
So your listeners know how I came to write the book. This began for me when I was 2 years old, when my father had a heart attack. He did survive, but later on he developed skin cancer, which went to his brain. And I watched on and off for about 40 years as my mother was a caregiver to him. But I could only see it through my eyes, not hers. And I made some pretty unfair judgments about it along the way because I had no idea what she could possibly be going through. Because here she was caring for the person she was in love with and losing him at the same time. Well, finally, it happened to me. And my love was diagnosed with colon cancer with very little chance of survival. And that was just about a month after he asked me to marry him. And he got through it, and he did survive that a year, by the way, he wasn't even supposed to survive. He developed congestive heart failure. And from then on, I spent every single night, you know, listening to his heartbeat, wondering if he'd make it through to the next day. And without realizing it, I became my mother. Same pain, same challenges. And the next step, we moved to California so he could get a heart transplant. And that was the next disaster, because after the transplant, his body began to fail him. And he had a laundry list of ailments, just to name a few. He had skin cancer, depression, sleep disorders, Parkinson's, kidney failure. And he ended up on dialysis. And I can't even remember how many ambulance rides and emergency room visits there were from the heart failure and bleeds outs and falls. But somewhere along the way, he decided he'd had enough. And it took him about 6 months, but he decided to go off dialysis. And he went off knowing he would die in 5 to 10 days. And he died in 5. But with all of my experience as a medical psychotherapist, I was never prepared for anything like this. And the worst part was I had to blaze my own trail for 11 and a half years because there was nowhere to turn for answers. And because of this, I decided to do everything I could not to let anybody go through anything like this because there wasn't a place to have a roadmap. But the Caregiving Wife's Handbook is a wellspring of hope for the marriage and the life of a caregiver so that you can make life work while your loved one's health is falling apart. So there are tools and skills and methods that you'll learn in the Caregiving Wife's Handbook that will help you respond to the very circumstances that you're asking me about. And let me go to your second question, because it was the one on, making your loved one happy. And then I'll go back a little bit to the over-caring and how we tend to diminish the person a little bit, that they don't get tough and take care of themselves where they could. But in terms of making another person happy, we can't do that. It's not our job. While it is our responsibility to make sure that the person we're caring for is safe, if they can't be in charge of that themselves, it is not our job to make them happy. We can't do it.
No, but how about the reverse of that? How about if you're being taken care of? How do you, in some way, help that person maintain their own happiness? Because you could be such a drag on them. There are so many things that I've read about in your book. For example, it's easy to get sloppy when someone takes care of you that you begin asking for everything. You know, it's stuff that you could do yourself. And here's where, you know, the co-addiction comes in.
Right.
What can you do as the person who is sick to show your love for the person taking care of you? Even
very
if it
good
means,
question,
even
no
if
one's
it means
to me that way, yeah. Because we're usually looking at it from the point of the caregiver's behavior. one of the important points of the entire book is compassion for yourself and each other. It is not just about compassion for the sick person. It is compassion for the caregiver as well. And one of the biggest tools that you will learn in the Caregiving Wife's Handbook is a six-step communication and conflict resolution method. So that when you, let's say that I'm the spouse taking care of the sick person, and I, as the sick person, you know, want to be better toward my husband who's taking care of me, we need to talk about it. We need to sit down and say, you know, honey, are there things that I'm doing that are making it more difficult for you to be my caregiver? Mm. You ask that question, because so many caregivers think that everything is their responsibility, and they feel so badly for the sick person that they just take on anything that the sick person wants them to do. So as the sick person, you can ask your caregiver, you know, can I make this any easier for you?
Well, but you see, I would imagine.
The flip side of this codependency part is.
Yes, go ahead and go there. Huh?
I'm sorry?
Okay, go there, yes.
Okay, because it's the flip side of it. If we are doing something for somebody else which enables them to stay weak or in their inappropriate behavior, what we end up doing is invalidating them. We turn them into an invalid where they didn't have to be. And it's more typical for wives, I think, than husbands, is that the moment we hear that our husband is ill, we just plunge right in and we want to take over everything because, geez, you know, our husband is dying. This is critical stuff. So we just want to do it all and make it all better, and you know, we take on every role. But in that process, particularly a wife dealing with a husband, we take his manhood away. We take his ability to make decisions away. There might be physical activities he still could be doing, and we make him weaker because we jump in and do all that. So he loses his self-respect while he is a sick person.
Well, okay, from the other side of it, I understand what you're saying. We may, by not telling the truth. Now, look, here's the truth. If you're stuck being a caretaker, you're going to get angry. Some piece of you is going to resent it. You can say all the prayers you want and light all the candles you want, but some part of you is going to resent this role that you're stuck in. And that anger, somehow, whether it's rational or non-rational, is going to come out in your caretaking. And I'm trying to look at a method that could be used, and some part of what you're explaining, part of what you're suggesting might lead to that, where yeah. I, as the caregivee, right, not the sick one, but the caregivee, the one receiving right. the care, what's my responsibility? What am I supposed to do? How am I supposed to help my partner, the one who loves me, right, in their need? Now, I have, imagine this. Imagine I know a man. He's got a wife who's taking care of him, and he's sick. And then she's also taking care of her mother. Her mother is another one who's sick. Her life is tossed between taking care of her mother and taking care of her husband. And that's all she does with her time. And it drives her crazy because she feels so obligated to do it. And every now and then she has a major explosion. What could be done? How could I, as the husband, how could the caregivee help that person who you know she's just caught in this role of denying herself and taking care of others?
Two sides to that. If you're wondering what the sick person can do.
Let's say the caregivee.
The sick person again.
I don't like using the word sick person.
And say, look, honey, you know, you're doing all these things for me that I really don't need to have you do, so take a break. But in terms of the caregiver, and you learn in the Caregiving Wife's Handbook about self-care, and you'll learn there's a whole chapter, a whole section on understanding your emotions and life in the guilt factory. Because the anger that you're speaking of is going to be there. It's just a natural outcome of this. I mean, you know, your life has just been blown out of the water. You didn't expect this to be happening at this point in your life. And all the wishes, all the plans, all the dreams, all of that, it's just gone in one fell swoop. So, yes, you're angry, you're resentful. But it is not the sick person's job to fix that for you. There are several ways of handling this. First of all, to know that emotions are neither good nor bad, they just are. So that if you have the anger and that you have the guilt, know that it's a normal reaction. Now, too much anger and too many stored emotions absolutely will spill over into the care of your loved one. Within the Caregiving Wife's Handbook, in the emotions chapter, there is one activity for releasing anger with imagery. And it's being in a woods, and you have a boulder and a sledgehammer, and you're going to be hitting in your imagination on that boulder, saying all the things that you really would like to say to get them out of your system. And we have found that just simply doing that in imagery does release some of that anger. Additionally, as I spoke about the six-step communication and resolution plan, one of the first steps is to sit down with this 24-question planning guide. And what these are prompts, and it's I'm angry about, and then it's blank, and you fill it in.
Wait. Back that up a little bit. Back that up for a moment. Yes. What you're about to describe is something I'd like to give more detail about the steps that you're recommending.
Yes.
But my question still becomes, why don't you tell the caregivee, you keep calling them the sick one, I call them the infirmed. Why don't you tell the person who is the caregivee that you're angry when they
you
are?
Will.
Why don't you say it outright to them? Why don't you just say, I'm angry at you?
You will.
But what you're recommending is go kick a rock.
No, I am not. Well, for one thing, you wouldn't do that in person. But where the second technique that I'm mentioning to you is this six-step communication guide. Because what you're going to prepare for is that discussion with the infirm, where you will let them know what you're angry about and try to come up with resolutions. So I'm walking you through steps.
What is the guidelines around how you express your anger when you feel it? Because mostly what I know of is a blow-up. Mostly I know people blow up finally, and they say, that's it, I can't take any more, and you scream and scream and scream, and then you hate yourself for screaming.
Two things. One is you're not going to be perfect, and yes, there will be times where you blow up. Second is, back to these steps. If you follow these steps, and I'll still walk you through them, then the discussion about the things that you're angry about doesn't have to be as heated. And it isn't that we're just trying to be compassionate for the sick person. We want compassion for the caregiver because, as you were just saying, it doesn't feel very comfortable for the caregiver to have these strong emotions. So if we can get conflict resolution, then you're not going to have all of these blow-ups.
I understand, Diana. The problem is this is one of the things I call a gitnip. Good in theory. This is one of the things I call a gitnip. Good in theory, but not necessarily in practice if you're an emotional person. If you're a logical person, you could sit down and you could easily say, well, let's examine the number of things I'm angry about, and I'll sort them out and I'll bring them to my mother and then I'll tell her why I'm angry and then I'll have a logical conversation with her. But there are times you are just being, you know, you just blow up and you feel like blowing up and you criticize yourself for feeling so angry. My belief is that if you're not the kind of person who could sort everything out, that every now and then a blow up is a good thing because it tells the person you're taking care of, I have a limit. There's a place you can't take me. And you say it with enough force that that person fears being abandoned by you. They have to, in some way, not want your anger to come out again. So they have to treat you differently. That's what I think. That's one way of doing it. That may be Sicilian, but it may be our way
that
of doing it.
That would be it, yes.
Linda, let me ask you about this, because you know a lot about this. Linda Vanella, who's worked with numerous people around caregiving, Linda, what's your question about it?
Yes, Diana, I do wonder how people, because I see your tools are so wonderful, and again, in theory, they make so much sense, but having dealt with many caregivers, they do oftentimes speak about that fear of maybe someone who has never even been able to express their own anger and finds himself in this sort of rageful outburst, and then of course feeling tremendously guilty. How could I have yelled at my mother like that? How could I have yelled at somebody, my husband, who can't really walk, and here I am yelling at him to walk faster? So I guess it's that very basic, on the spot, how can we help someone who struggles with those feelings of outbursts?
That's a great question, Linda. That's exactly the question. The person blows up and they feel bad about blowing up. How do you help the person who just screamed at the person they're taking care of, and they feel horrible about having screamed? What do you say to them, Diana, as a counselor doing exactly what you do?
Okay. Back to the concept that emotions are neither good nor bad, they just are, and that you're not going to be perfect. But it would be at that point, whether they're a logical or an emotional personality, you start giving them skills. If somebody is driving a car and, you know, they're trying to park it and, you know, they bash into somebody's car because they don't have the skills, do we simply just deal with, oh, yes, I'm the kind of person who doesn't know how to park, so I keep bashing my car into other people, which is kind of what you're saying? Or do we finally teach the person how to park the car correctly, which is what I'm saying? You deal with this first scenario that yes, you have this angry outburst. It's normal to have that. You need not feel guilty because emotions are neither good nor bad. They just are. But now it's time to learn another way.
See, the people I know have been trying the therapeutically sound way for so many years of expressing themselves. They are doing it exactly by prescription. Let me tell you what I'm feeling.
They haven't tried the caregiving wife's handbook.
Well, okay, so let's look at step number one. And then, of course, in 5 minutes, we're going to take a break. But if you will, please stay with us now. And I definitely am going to need a second program on this because people are listening with bated breath. They need this. And thanks to you, we have this available to us. The name of the book, The Caregiving Wife's Handbook. Caregiving Wife's Handbook. By Dr. Diana Denholm, available, and it's a soft cover book. It's beautiful, and it's filled with tools. Let's stick with tools, step number one, and let's give it away, Diana. Let's give them the exact step and how it would be done, okay? The exact step, not, you know, buy the book to read the step, but let's give them the step.
Yes, I will give them the step, okay. There are the 24 questions, and I gave you a couple. You know, I'm angry about such and such. I'm upset about this. I'm worried about it. And there are 24 prompts. And you just brainstorm with yourself. You write down your responses for nobody else to see. And this also is one of the ways to release anger. Simply writing these is going to get some of the anger out of your system.
Now, wait a minute. From what I read, whether they have the book or not, you're saying important things are left unsaid. One of the things that you could do is you want to be able to bring yourself out in the open with yourself. Now, if they don't have a checklist, what are they supposed to write down?
All the things that anger them. Any concern that they have concerning the caregiving, whether it's about money, whether it's about sex and intimacy, whether it's about legalities. I know one woman, you know, her husband would not talk to her about their finances for after he was gone. Whatever is bothering you, you just write this stuff down.
Everything, including your Estomini bag, smells bad.
I
can't take
that.
Your complaining. I don't like the way you smell, which is a really difficult thing.
Yeah, I'm angry. You know, you ruined my life. You ruined our retirement. You know, you're not a nice mother anymore, whatever it is.
Yeah, you're eating wrong, you're still smoking cigarettes, and you're sick, you know. All of that stuff, you're drinking, all of this stuff that drives you crazy and you keep...
Yeah, it's your fault, you caused it. Ugly things.
Ugly things that you could feel inside. So you say, or Diana says, make a list. And on this list, write down everything that bothers you. Everything. censor nothing. We're not giving this list to anybody.
Right.
But to be able to write it down and to think, what are the things that are bothersome? Now, I suggest, because I'm going to write the other book, I suggest that as a caregivee, that you write down a list of everything that bothers you, including the look on the other person's face when they smirk at you sometimes, including the resentment that you see when you really need them. You write down everything on your list that you don't like as well. So we have two ways of doing it, because I, as the caregiver, want to learn as much as I'm sure every caregiver, and I am a caregiver as well, want to learn. So step one is you write everything down. Okay, now, Diana, how do you sort these out? Do you just deliver them in a letter and send them by text message to whoever's?
They are hidden, and you probably don't want them on your computer. So you're going to sort them, again, for your eyes only. Things that I want to say but don't expect a response. Now, sometimes this is simply, you know, I really love you, and I'm sorry that I'm so awful to you some of the time. And you're saying that not because you want your loved one to say, oh, that's all right, honey, but it's because you just need to say it. So there would be things like that. And then the next would be things I want to say but won't, because it won't make a difference.
Oh, wait a minute. Among the things I want to say and will, there's nothing bad? It's all good like that? You're suggesting just say the nice things?
Something bad.
Say
something. We're going to deal with a lot of the bad later.
Okay, but give me an example of something that somebody would say that's, like, I can't stand the way you smell.
That's coming up.
I wish you would bathe yourself more. It's coming up where?
Because we've got four categories.
Oh, I see. So in the second step, after you make your list of all the things, we're going to break it into four different categories.
Right.
Okay, but in the first category, the first one you're saying, what are you saying goes in the first?
The things that you want to say that you don't expect a response to.
Okay. I just want to let you know.
I'm in a living hell here. And you just, you know, that could be on your list as something to say, but you really wouldn't be expecting somebody to respond to it.
In fact, you don't want a response.
You may not.
You just want to let your partner know where you are.
Mm-hmm.
Or your mother or your daughter.
We're probably not going to say that.
Yeah.
Remember, we're just sorting.
Okay. Oh, this is in the sorting. I'm sorry. Thank you. So in the sorting process, you're going to sort into four categories. None of this is taking place yet. We are teaching. We are giving lessons. Our guest is Diana Denholm. The name of the book, The Caregiving Wife's Handbook. Okay, if you're sorting into four categories, the first is things I would like to say, but I don't expect a response to. The second category?
Is things I want to say but won't, because it won't make a difference.
Such as?
Okay, and this one, men can relate to a little bit, and the women certainly will. The one of the 10 years that we've been asking our husband to put the toilet seat down after he uses the bathroom so that we don't fall in if we get up in the middle of the night. You know, you've said it, and you've said it, and you've said it, and you've said it. So, you know, you're probably not going to mention it again because it never does any good. But it still bothers you, so you still have it on your list.
I always wondered why the women didn't put the seat up after using it. Okay, step number two, the things that you would say that you don't say.
Well, things you want to say but won't, because it won't make a difference.
Because it won't make a difference, no matter what I say.
Hmm. Yeah, so, I mean, because you've tried it. There'll be the things, I mean, maybe it was, you know, you've asked him to pick up his socks, or you've asked her to, you know, stop leaving your hair curlers on the sink. You know, it can be anything, but it never works.
Because you've tried it and that doesn't work. Okay,
right.
Now listen, Diana, this is very exciting, and if you don't mind, please stick with us. We're going to take a short break. We have to do station identification. We're going to play a little music, and then we're going to pick right up with this program on the Caregiving Wife's Handbook, Diana Denholm. Stay with us, Diana. We'll be right back. We'll be right back.
Now it's your turn to cry over me. Every road has a turning, and that's one thing you're learning. I cry for you. Oh, what a fool I used to be. But I found two eyes, just a little bit bluer. I found a heart, just a little bit truer. I cried for you. Now it's your turn to cry. Your turn to cry over me. Every road has a turning, and that's one thing you're learning. I cried for you. Oh, what fool I used to be.
You're on the air, Armand.
I found two eyes just a little bit bluer. I found a heart just a little bit truer. For you. Now it's your turn to cry over me.
That's Billie Holiday. Seems appropriate on some level. Hey, this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Diana Denholm is our guest, the Caregiving Wife's Handbook. Some really interesting questions around this. We're talking specifically about the question that Linda Vanella asked about expressing the anger that you feel and what you do with it. And Diana Denholm has described the first step, which is making a list of everything you feel, everything you're aware of, and you all the things that you would that relate to this being in the caretaker role. Then she says we're sorting it out into four categories. Category one is things that you want to say that you don't necessarily want a response to. And the second step, I think you said, Diana, is things that you want to say that you know are not going to change. Is that what you said?
Yeah, things that you want to say but won't, because you know it won't make a difference.
So you won't say them. For example, let's say the person you're taking care with tends to drink too much, because alcohol is one of the refuge for people who are sick. They say, well, at least give me a drink, you know, at least give me a glass of wine. Let me feel something mellow. And then you know they fall down. And, you know, the greatest number of falls are related to that kind of stuff. And you're looking at it and they fall, then you got to take them to the hospital and you got to do all that and deal with all that damage. So you want to say, don't drink. But you know it's not going to make a difference. They're going to drink.
That would be if you think it won't make a difference, because it hasn't before. See, as people develop their lists, and I do want to recommend the website, which is www.caregivingwife.com.
Sure.
Because there are tips and hints and tools and articles that will help the caregivers. But with this, you know, there's no judgment on the list. You decide where you want to put the things. And remember that any illness does not happen in a vacuum. It's going to be happening in the context of an existing relationship. So the issues that might be bothering you might not necessarily be caregiving related. I mean, there might be other issues in the marriage, and your anger and strong emotions about those are spilling over into your caregiving.
For example, like what? Like a lack of physical attention?
Well, yes, that could be one, but let's say you have an abusive relationship to begin with. You know, and this person is constantly verbally abusive to you, and now you're supposed to turn around, you know, and be his very kind, sweet caregiver. You know, the illness happens in the context of the relationship. And what you put on your list, you know, you're the only one who's going to judge whether you think it will make a difference or not. But part of the making the difference will be, as we move a little bit further through this, is you're going to learn some skills and tools to use where you might be able to have it make a difference. So let's move to the third one, because this is all the ugly, nasty stuff. And it's the things I want to say but should only share with a friend. And that's where it's, you know, you're dirty, you're smelly, you're disgust me, who would want to have sex with you? You've got, you know, tubes hanging out of your body, and you think, you know, why would I want to have sex with you? I'm waiting on you hand and foot, and now I'm supposed to turn around and be your lover, or vice versa. You know, I have needs, too, and just because you're sick doesn't mean, you know, you can't take care of my needs. It can be anything. But this is where you put the ugly stuff, and you sort that into category C. Because those are the
You say you say this to your friend, but you don't say it to your partner?
Correct.
Why?
Okay. I'm not going to place judgment on who puts what where. If you decide that you need to talk to your spouse, and absolutely the sex and intimacy and hygiene issues will come up, but then you're going to have a way to have that discussion.
Right.
So you will decide. You know, well, for one thing, it's going to be the manner in which you do it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're not going to be coming out right when you do have a discussion and saying, you disgust me. That discussion would be done in a different manner. But let's put it a slightly different way. The ugly ways that you are tempted to say it go on your C list, and this is what you share with a friend.
Okay.
You know, my husband just disgusts me because he smells and, you know, tubes coming out. But then when you have a discussion with him about your concern, you know, honey, I'm having a real difficult time with this, because there is a smell related to it, and it just, you know, I can't get in the mood while there is that smell.
Diana, I can't imagine having a wife who's sick and me talking to one of my friends about how she smells bad. It sounds so disrespectful to my wife to talk to my friend about the things that are so intimate.
Men would find that...
I could see it in a group.
I'm sorry?
I could see it in a caregiving group, but I can't imagine how disrespectful it is to give these intimate details to somebody who's even your friend, because isn't your loyalty first to your partner? Isn't there a certain dishonoring you do by doing that?
It depends how you do it and with whom you do it. Certainly it can be done in a group. Some people are not comfortable with that, but they know within that group there's going to be a relatability because, you know, everyone in the room is going to be nodding their head when you say it. But when you have a really intimate friend, a really close friend, and more women do than men, because men don't talk about their feelings as much, but women are more likely to share with their friends, you know, all these more disgusting hygienic things. And a man is not likely to share that with his friends. And if a man feels that it's disrespectful to do that, then he shouldn't do it.
Well, but I would imagine the following happens. You talk to the average friend about something, the first thing they're going to do is give you advice. See, this is what most friends do. But if you had a therapist like you, if somebody came to you and described it, you would say, I understand how you feel. But not many friends are going to do that. Most friends are going to jump on it in some way or other and say, give you an advice or give you their opinion. So it sounds like giving it out to a friend, I would rather you found a therapist. Because how many friends can function at that level of being able to separate themselves and to say, oh, I see how you feel. It must be very difficult, which is what a friend would do, but most friends don't do that.
Well, a couple of things. Not everyone can afford a therapist as much as we'd like them to come to see us. And one of the communication tools would be when we go to speak with our friend to let them know, look, you know, and it's easier for women than it is for men. I mean, you know, hands down on that issue. But I go to one of my lady friends and I say, look, you know, there's some stuff that I just have to get out of my system. I'm not looking for any advice, but I just need to say these things. And you say them, and the person doesn't have to give you advice, and they may not understand. They may say, you know, I have no idea what you're going through, but, you know, I can listen. Because we're not asking our friends to be a therapist. There's a big difference between friend and therapist. But certainly men are far less comfortable than women in discussing this. And that's what, you know, the book was The Caregiving Wife's Handbook, because more of it was focused to the things that they would do, and the women will. Women probably are talking about their sex lives with their friends far more than the men are with their friends.
But when the women are discussing it with their friends, they're also getting advice. You see,
yes and no.
It's the kind of, okay, now you may have, in your part of Florida, you may be lucky enough to find a fellow therapist friend who has that kind of separation. Linda, can you imagine talking to your friend about the details of some of the more difficult stuff you would have?
Well, let me say this, Armand. I had run a caregivers group for Alzheimer's patients for over 20 years out in Port Jefferson. And these kinds of issues did come up. And I feel while I myself, and I know many people, I think would be more reluctant to share such an intimate, detailed kind of, in a group setting, that would be very much open. And I think, all you need is one person to say, or the moderator, like myself, might say, gee, there might be some things that you want to share that you don't want to share with the person you love, but certainly need to get it out. And then you would hear these kinds of comments, oh, I'm repulsed, oh, I'm angry, oh, I don't like the way he smells. And I think there's a feeling of more freedom.
But what about the question of the one-to-one?
I think one-to-one people who, unless they have experienced it themselves, might not be able to relate.
None that I know of.
Might even feel a sense of wanting to take care of them. Oh, no, you can't let that happen. Use soap or, you know, again, come to some kind of remedy or solution.
Yeah, but it's a good theory.
Yes. Yes, of course.
Okay. So step number, in this step, you're trying to say to your friend some of these details, right? And I suggest you find it to a therapist or a group.
Let me go back to these.
Sure.
It is not a step. We are sorting our responses.
Okay.
We've written down all these things that annoy us, and we've sorted our responses. So it is not saying that you go and share it with a friend. This is saying that you separate all those things that are so bad that they probably should only be shared with a friend.
Okay, good.
It could be a support group as well. But then the next category, and again, this is not a step, this is the sorting that's going on.
Mm-hmm.
The things that I really need to talk about, know about, have resolved, or make a decision about, those are going to be the things that you talk about. And it might be, in very many cases, it's going to be the sex, the hygiene, all the caregiving issues, the money, investments, funeral plans, all these things would go in that category. So it's up to the individual to do the categorizing. There's no judgment placed on where you put something.
Okay, that makes sense. Now you've done it. Now you have a sorted life. Sorted. You've sorted out your feelings and your thoughts, and you have them all out there, and you'd like to examine them. But, you know, sometimes the very things you're reacting to have other roots, have other like, what if you had a father you took care of, and now it's impacting on your relationship with your husband that you're taking care of? Do you include that in your sorting process? Do you ask yourself, how have I been here before? Not just about the things I'm feeling about them, but the way I feel now.
The sorting isn't analyzing. It's simply sorting your own responses.
Okay.
You're not looking at them to determine, oh, well, you know, why did I become this way? It just, this is the way I feel. These are the issues, and this is what I need to talk about. So then once you have that, and you're coming down to this category D, which are the things you really need to talk about, then you need to learn how to talk about them. Because communication isn't just talking. And what you'll learn in the Caregiving Wife's Handbook will be effective communication tools so that you can get some resolution to your problems and concerns. And while this seems, you know, very kind of business-like, this, in a way it is, because this is some of the most important business of your life. You know, getting this marriage to work the best that it can be, or getting the relationship with your, you know, your mother that you're caring for the best that it can be during this very difficult time. So there are some basic communication tools that you'll learn in the book. One of them that I particularly like is to avoid why questions. If we are asking our husband, why aren't you picking up your socks? We really don't want to know why. That's simply our indirect way of saying, please pick up your socks. So we avoid why questions. And, we need to use their language. Whoever we're speaking to, if it's our parent or if it's our spouse, whoever we're caring for, if there's somebody who uses a lot of touchy-feely words, then we want to use that kind of word with them. For instance, well, how do you feel about us having a caregiver coming in? But if the person you're talking to is not a feely kind of person and they're more in the thinking mode, we want to speak to them in their language. What do you think about this? Do you think it would be a good idea to have a caregiver an assistant come in, to give you your showers? So we use their language, because if we're speaking Russian and they're speaking English, we can talk to them all we want. It's not going to work.
Diana, we're going to be running short of time soon, and we've just scratched the surface.
We have.
I have a question for you. Do you have tomorrow available? Can you make it available? Can we continue this one more day?
Tomorrow would be too tight.
You couldn't do it tomorrow at 1.
I have a book signing tomorrow.
What's more important?
Our listeners, of course.
Maybe for next Tuesday, we'll try to get that. Let me go back to this. Since I have this, what I consider to be the vital thing, your book is very, very helpful. We're going to be doing more programming on it. Let's go back to the caregivee's responsibility, because this is the thing that is not written about and you don't see very often. If you're somebody who is depending on somebody else, what can you do for them? You buy them flowers every week. What do you do? How do you show your love? You said, Linda was telling me a story about a friend who sent her. What was that story about? They sent her to, the father sent her away for a month.
Oh, yes. One of my actually very dear friends, she always reflects on this. When her father took ill, he was in his 70s. And mom and dad were about the same age, and he wound up with a debilitating illness that was going to run its course, but he planned on being around for a while. And so they kind of made a plan where she would be almost forced to take a cruise, a trip with a girlfriend, one of the kids, whoever she chose, but it was mandated. It was something that he kind of initiated and put things into motion that she would have time off and that they would have other help in the house. And their daughter, who happens to be my friend, always reflects back on that and saying that she had never seen a couple work and, of course, love her father as well as her mother in their way of doing it. And today her mother is a very vibrant 80-something-year-old woman. She's independent. She has a wonderful life, even better than she had previously in her younger days. So there is room for growth at times like this.
So it takes consciousness. And sometimes the wiser one is the one who is sick. And sometimes it's not the caretaker who is the wiser one, but the one who is sick is wise. And if you are wise, then what do you do that's for your other person's benefit, right, that they may not even know to do themselves? These are the kind of questions I would look at, because these are sometimes, a compulsive giver. They'll just give their soul away and then get rageful at you. So what do you do as the giver? Now, again, that question to you, because I think it would be very valuable, Diana, and we will, of course, be continuing with more after everybody buys your book.
Okay. Well, I have a couple of answers to that.
Good, let me have that.
From the caregiving wives themselves, the women that are interviewed in the book that share their stories, the most important things that their husbands did for them, that they commented on the most, was some of them virtually every day their husband would say, "I love you and thank you for taking such good care of me." And, when you've got somebody who's dying and they're getting closer and closer to death, they're certainly not in a position to be doing, ordering flowers for you or doing other things. But simply telling your caregiver that, you know, thank you, I love you, I know this is hard for you. That was the most moving thing for these caregiving wives.
Well, that's a big one, especially not just an I love you, which gets so cheap to say, but to say I know this is hard for you, mm-hmm. and I see how hard this is for you. That's touching.
Yes.
That touches the soul of the person who's the caregiver. What else could we do? What else could the caregivee do? And I think one of the answers in your book is you could take care of yourself better. You got to be careful that even though the other person is serving you, don't ask for small things that you might be able to do yourself. Try not to ask that person for the glass of water when you could get, even though it would take you 10 times the effort to get the glass of water. Do it yourself. Show that you're giving an effort into it. Because part of what we're going to yet to talk about is the codependence and how the very act of what you're doing could very often make that person a little sicker. You see? By not encouraging them to do it. So as a caregivee, doing stuff yourself and trying to relieve that from the other person, even though it takes you 10 times the effort, is a very strong act of love.
And the caregivee's self-esteem is going to increase, and they're going to be healthier on many levels because they're doing that.
Well, that's a good point.
So many caregivees basically feel disenfranchised.
Yeah.
By jumping in and doing even the smallest tasks, once again, they reclaim their vitality as a living human being.
Or even as a dying human being. You know, even the vitality of a dying human being. We got about one more minute. Where would you want to take this besides reminding people that you have a website called, what is the website again?
www.caregivingwife.com.
Caregivingwife.com. You must promise to come back on air because people are going to get annoyed with me for having occupied too much of the time when we wanted to interview you.
I promise to do that.
We got a promise. Diana Denholm, the book, The Caregiving Wife's Handbook. Beautiful stuff. Good stuff. And you were just featured in the New York Times, weren't you?
Yes, I was. Jane Brody wrote a wonderful article.
I saw that. It's a beautiful article on you. Thank you so much for being with us, Diana. We had so many more questions, but I guess we'll just have to leave it at that. If a person wanted to find resources that they could possibly use, what would they do? Look up caregiving services and...
One of the things on the Caregiving Wife's handbook site, the www.caregivingwife.com, there is a resource section. But also in the book itself, it teaches you, you'll learn exactly how to use the computer to find any of the resources that you want that are very current.
Including support groups and stuff like
everything.
That.
Whatever you need in any part of the country, if you look in the resource section of the Caregiving Wife's handbook, you'll learn how to access what's near you and have current information.
Thank you so much, Diana, for being with us. Thank you, my friend. This is Diana Denholm. Sure, we'll be doing a second section of this sometime in the near future. Thank you, Linda Vanella. Thank you, Jana.
Welcome.
We'll be back. Thank you so much, my friends. Bye-bye.
It was just a phrase that I heard and played. I was acting a part. But now when I whisper, amor mio, can't you tell I care by the feeling there? 'Cause it comes from my heart. I want you.